Crisco's Radio Newspaper with Bernardine Flynn. Brought to you by Crisco, the pure all-vegetable shortening. It's digestible. And now, Bernardine Flynn.
Thank you, Durward, and hello, friends. In just a moment, Durward Kirby will bring us a report on today's world news. But first, let me tell you about the happy homecoming of a group of American servicemen. Yesterday, some 1,500 sun-tanned Navy CBs arrived in San Francisco, as happy as youngsters with a piece of candy at seeing American shores again. These men belonged to the first two units of CBs ever organized, and had been down in the South Pacific for 23 months, practically 2 years. Foreign lands and customs were interesting, but the good old USA was home. As their big gray transport nosed into the San Francisco dock yesterday, the CBs yelled and cheered, and three military bands broke out with stirring music. Everybody was gloriously happy. Then the CBs saw a group of waves standing on the dock. "Look, fellows," one of them shouted. "Look, there's women with shoes on." And now, Durward, what's the latest news?
First off, Bern, there's been another heavy American air raid on Berlin. Strong forces of our flying fortresses and liberators attacked industrial targets in the German capital this morning. Some idea of the size of the raid can be gained from the Air Force announcement that today's formations dropped more than 350,000 incendiary bombs and more than 10,000 high explosives. Earlier this morning, American medium bombers flew over the channel to strike at German targets in Holland. Last night, RAF bombers made a heavy raid on railway targets about 100 miles southwest of Paris. On the Italian battlefront, savage night fighting is reported to have broken out in the battered streets and buildings of Cassino. There has been no decisive change in the battle lines inside the town, but fierce fighting is reported still in progress. In the Anzio beachhead sector, the Germans apparently have begun moving up troops and armor for the fourth major offensive against the British and American forces. At the moment, the only fighting taking place on the beachhead is in the form of minor patrol activity. Russia's armies are reported using special mud sledges in their drive across the quagmire battlefronts of the southwestern Ukraine. The Soviets have outflanked Tarnopol, a vital junction on the main trunk railroad between Odessa and Warsaw. The Germans are rushing up air reserves and undertaking counterattacks in a desperate effort to halt the Russian drive toward Romania. But the Russians are pushing ahead, counterattacks or no counterattacks. On the international diplomatic and political front, there are a couple of new developments today. British newspapers say Russia has rejected Polish counterproposals concerning the boundary dispute. But the Polish premier in exile says his government has not been informed of such action. Two Yugoslav cabinet members have arrived in London in an effort to patch up the differences between King Peter's government and Marshal Tito, the leader of the partisan forces fighting the Germans in Yugoslavia. And Britain's Foreign Secretary, Anthony Eden, says that Britain is keeping a close watch on the Argentine situation in South America, conducting only routine matters with the Faro government until the confusion and uncertainty surrounding the picture are cleared up. On the production front, Britain's production minister, Oliver Littleton, discloses that Britain turned out more than 90,000 planes from the beginning of the war to the end of 1943. Britain, meantime, is having more coal mine trouble, with the strike of Welsh miners spreading to additional mines. Out in the Pacific, American forces have made new strides in their drive against the Japanese. We have gained control of Los Negros Island in the Admiralty Group, leapfrogged up the north coast of New Britain to within 170 miles of Rabaul, and driven up the south coast of New Britain to within 50 miles of Gazmata. On the Asiatic mainland, the jaws of a Chinese-American trap are closing rapidly on Japanese forces in Burma. And in the Central Pacific, new air raids have been made against the Marshalls and the Carolines. And that's the top of today's world news. Now, Bernardine?
I was thinking about a friend of mine who called up the other morning. You see, friend, she was expecting company for dinner that night and was all set to make a pie for dessert. Then it started to rain, and that meant no pie, she said. Well, I couldn't figure the connection to save my life. And then she told me when it rained, she just never had good luck with pie crust.
You mean that she didn't know about Crisco's pastry method?
No, she didn't. And telling her almost made me late for the program.
Oh.
You know, friend, you never have to worry about pastry failures when you use the new Crisco pastry method. You get tender, flaky pie crust every single time. Even beginners get grand results. Pie crust so tender and flaky, they're eaten to the last crumb. There's no worry about upset digestions either. Made with Crisco, pie set just as light as can be, digestible for the whole family. It just seems as though Crisco and the pastry method were the answer to any pie maker's dream. And the directions are right on the label of your Crisco jar.
I tell you, you're going to be awful busy making pies once you try it. I'll bet you the family wants pie for dessert every other night.
Well, maybe not quite that often. But I'll tell you one thing, they'll eat every smidgen of every pie you make.
I'll see.
Just you try Crisco and the new Crisco pastry method and see. You can count on this. It'll be tender, flaky pie crust every time.
Well, Bern, how about another story?
Here's a story, Durward, about the people of occupied Europe. People who are past masters in the art of heckling the Germans. Probably no nation has developed this specialized science with any greater skill than Poland. But then Poland was the first to be occupied. This little story from Warsaw will show you what I mean. The other day, the Germans in Warsaw were very, very busy because suddenly, official-looking posters had appeared all over the Polish capital, in shop windows, on street corners, lamp posts, and wherever people were likely to gather. The posters were supposedly signed by Wilhelm Koppe, head of the German police in Warsaw. And of all things, they ordered all German nationals to leave the city and return to the fatherland. Well, you can imagine what confusion there was among the German residents. Within an hour or two after the posters appeared, Germans were rushing all over Warsaw trying to buy railroad tickets, drawing their money out of the banks and buying what groceries they could. While all that was going on, the German police were also as busy as cats on a tin roof. They were scurrying all around Warsaw, trying to convince their panic-stricken fellow countrymen that the posters were fake. All day long, they tore down the posters, which had been distributed by the Polish underground, and replaced them with a real proclamation by Police Chief Koppe, which told of the hoax. But even then, many of the Germans didn't know whether they should go home or stay in Warsaw, for they are so used to German propaganda by now that it's pretty hard to tell them anything else. Even the truth.
Bern, as you know, representatives of all the occupied countries have set up exile governments in London. Well, the other day, some officials of the Dutch government had some very, very secret documents they wanted a photographer to reproduce. But they wouldn't let the photographer work on them unless he promised not to look. Well, he promised. He put on a blindfold and went to work, with the Dutch officials watching every move he made. The negatives he took were hardly dry before they were whisked into a sturdy satchel and hidden from all view. The photographer smiled to himself as he took off the blindfold and then turned to the officials. By the way, he asked, are those secret papers written in Dutch? Yes, the men replied. The photographer smiled even more. Well, he said, they might just as well have been written in double Dutch. We didn't need the blindfold because I can't read a word of your language.
Oh, goodness. Now, Durward, here's a story that disproves the belief that all Army sergeants are tough and hard-boiled. The Army sea ration hardtack, as you may have heard from your soldier friends, is usually known by the more familiar name of rock. The soldiers, it seems, think that name describes the food very appropriately. Well, for a number of days, cases of that hardtack kept piling up outside of an American mess tent in Italy. Nobody wanted it, of course, as long as there was anything else to eat. In fact, few soldiers even bothered to take the hard candies, which are included with all sea rations. But then, each night, Corporal John Scavetta of North Bergen, New Jersey, began appearing at the mess tent and collecting all the hardtack and candy that were left over. Corporal Scavetta is a very quiet young fellow, so you can imagine how he jumped when a burly sergeant caught him taking the food one night and gruffly asked him what he thought he was doing. Corporal shifted from one foot to the other and looked around nervously as though he were afraid someone was going to court-martial him. Then he explained, "There are a lot of refugees out there in Campania. You ought to see them eat these biscuits. Eat them like they were cake. I take the candy out to the children. You ought to hear them holler when they see me." Of course, the corporal knew this was against regulations. What went through the sergeant's mind about army regulations, we'll never know. Anyway, the sergeant didn't say a word, but looked cautiously over his shoulder and then dropped the hardtack he was holding into Corporal Scavetta's hand. Then he hunted through his pockets until he found several packs of candy. He added those to the pile, then turned and walked off with a grin a mile wide on his face. Yes, army sergeants have a heart, despite all that's said about them. For instance, there's Sergeant Paul Capitan of Hartford, Connecticut, who rides around Italy in a tank named Boomerang, accompanied by a mascot named Butch. Butch is a monkey, and a former organ grinder's monkey at that. And like Mary's little lamb, wherever Sergeant Capitan goes, Butch is sure to follow, even in battle. When the fighting is the heaviest, Butch is in the tank turret. But when there are not too many anti-tank shells coming his way, he likes to ride on top of the tank's radio antenna. And it's becoming a familiar sight to see the huge Boomerang rumble across the bumpy fields with little Butch swaying back and forth from the antenna in complete rhythm. Butch is another symbol that our servicemen, even in the thick of battle, have time for the little human things in life. And now, Durwood, what's the latest on the home front?
Well, Byrne, it looks as though the expected congressional battle over the OPA is about ready to start. As you know, the OPA is scheduled to go out of existence on June 30th unless Congress votes to extend its power. So far, no bill to that effect has been introduced into Congress, although one is expected shortly. Meantime, the Price Administrator, Mr. Bowles, says that the OPA program has saved us $89 billion so far in the war. And Economic Stabilization Director Vinson warns that if our present economic controls are weakened, billions of dollars will be added to the cost of the war. The cost of living will increase sharply, and the government will be hampered in its fight against inflation. Byrne, someone wants to know if meat and fat stamps will be handled the same as before.
Just the same. Under token rationing, the first 2 weeks, you'll have 3 red stamps worth 10 points each, or a total of 30 points for that 2-week period.
I see. And speaking of red points, Byrne, according to the papers, pork is still on the plentiful side.
Oh, and well, excuse me, Durwood, but...
Certainly.
That reminds me of a letter I got. Friend, you know how people like to pass recipes along. Well, a woman was writing me about what a grand help Crisco is to her in planning meals. And she mentioned a little trick she had for breading pork chops. It's to add a generous amount of poultry seasoning to the flour you use for breading the chops. I tried it the other night, and did those pork chops make a hit? You use just enough Crisco to cover the bottom of the skillet, and the chops come out so crisp and brown and so full of flavor.
And how about this? With Crisco frying those chops, you don't have to worry about digestion. Why, Crisco fried foods are so digestible, even the youngsters can pitch in.
That's right, friends. You see, Crisco is pure and all vegetable, digestible itself. And it's just the finest quality shortening you can use.
You betcha. With Crisco, everything you cook tastes better, and it's digestible. Now, Byrne, what's your last story?
Well, the mystery of what delayed a Boston elevated subway train at the Friends Street station the other day has finally been solved. It seems that Private John Conway was just getting home on a furlough. And as he stood in the station, the train rolled in. A pretty young girl guard put her head out from between two cars and called, "Friend Street, Friend Street." Private Conway took just one look, rushed up and kissed the guard. And as she confessed today, "I'm afraid we did hold up the train while he hugged me." But the passengers say all is forgiven. For you see, the guard was Private Conway's wife.
Well, friends, that's all for now. Join us again tomorrow for another edition of Crisco's Radio Newspaper.
Durwood Kirby will bring you the latest world news.
Bernardine Flynn will give you the colorful human interest side of the news.
And we're both saying goodbye for Procter & Gamble, the makers of Crisco. It's digestible.
We return you now to New York.